Live from the heart of Los Angeles, this is the online edition of the Life Changes Show.
Look at the bright lights. Look at the bright
lights. With tonight's guest, best-selling author and co-founder of the Spiritual Arts Institute, Dimitri Moraitis.
Look at the night sky.
And performance guest, singer, songwriter, Katie Buxton. I am Mark Leger, and now our host, the MC, the master of change, Filippo Voltaggio.
I was reminded, while speaking with our guest earlier today, of a previous interview that I, thanks to several people and to Dorothy Lee Donahue specifically, I had the pleasure of interviewing in person, and that's Dr. Masaru Emoto. And now, he's no longer with us, and so it was very special to have that interview, and even more special now. And I trust everybody listening to this particular show is familiar with his work, but I will say briefly that probably his most famous work was to tape a word to a flask of water for a period of time, and then take a drop of that water and freeze it, and then take it out of the freezer and with a microscopic camera, take a photo of the frozen water. And so the water that had positive words taped to it produced beautiful crystals that actually formed and were geometric and pleasant to look at and very surprising, actually. The water that had hateful or hurtful words taped to it produce distorted images, ununiform crystals, and definitely not as pleasant to look at. Now, why am I bringing this up now, and why was I reminded of this? Because of the meanings of the words. So first off, I, before going on, should say that we want to be careful what words we say to our water, what words we say to each other, and what words we say to ourselves, because obviously we're also made of water. So words make a difference. And so specifically though, to this show, reminds me of a question that came to me to ask Dr. Emoto. And through a translator, I asked, well, what about when we're kidding, or we use humor, or use a word that can be thought of as negative, but there's a double entendre and it makes us laugh. And what about words like that? If we taped a word like that onto a bottle of water, what would the crystal look like? And what I understood in the translator's version of what he said, and my understanding of it, was that the water would understand the intent of the word. And most likely the image would be beautiful or somehow funny or something. And it's that word intent that has stuck with me. And while speaking with our guest, I had no idea that intent, or rather, I didn't have the extent of idea of what we're going to learn today, how intent plays a bigger role in the conversation we're about to have, and that's on reincarnation, the afterlife, and its relationship to karma here on our episode 793 tonight.
I'm excited for tonight's conversation and your monologue, and remembering back to that work with Dr. Emoto reminded me, or at least brought to mind, the teaching that Greg Braden's been hammering home lately, which is the feeling is the magic, feeling the feeling of the wish fulfilled, which translates in my mind's eye to what you're talking about, the feeling of the word, the intent that goes along with it. And it's funny because it made me recall some feelings that I've had with various types of texts. Somebody may text, but you could feel the energy land different in different words.
Nice. Indeed. Very good. Well, we're going to dive into this whole conversation with intent with our interview guest, who is a world-renowned metaphysical teacher. He is a best-selling author of several books and a co-founder of the Spiritual Arts Institute, otherwise known as SAI. Dimitri Moraitis, welcome to the Life Changes Show.
Well, thank you for having me on. It's a pleasure.
And thank you for inspiring that. And so this is an interesting moment, actually, before we dive into intent, for us to be having this conversation. And that is because you share with us about Barbara, please.
Yes. Well, I started the Institute with Barbara Martin, and she's been a metaphysical pioneer and teacher for over 60 years. And she really helped to bring a lot of this to the public knowledge. She was especially known for her work with the auric field. And very interesting what you're talking about, like vibration, because like with the water, what's really happening is the vibration of the sound is going into the water, making the impression. So if the intent, if the words you say have good intention, that's the vibration going out. And that's why that's what matters. Be careful what you say. You create with your words. But yes, we just released the 25th anniversary edition of Change Your Aura, Change Your Life, the international bestseller. And God bless her, Barbara passed on 2 weeks ago. And, you know, the Institute is grieving, but we're also feeling this tremendous sense of joy and gratitude for all she brought. And I felt this overwhelming urge to just keep going, because this is what she would want. Because even, let's say, we were working the last night before she passed. I mean, this is a woman that was in her 90s. And I have learned something even more. You may retire from a job, but you're not retiring from life. And make sure to your last day on earth, you're doing the things you love and the things that give you a sense of purpose. And a good long life.
So condolences to you and your entire family and community. And this is also very interesting. And so thank you for keeping the interview. This has been booked for months and months. And it's interesting and special because it's also, you said 2 weeks ago, so it's within a period of time that she spoke about that is very important.
Right. So we're talking about karma and reincarnation. Barbara was seeing auras from age 3. And she was carefully, they called her the Mozart of metaphysics because her spiritual talents were off the charts. I've never met anybody that had that, multiple talents all at the same time, including bringing memory back of being on the other side. And one of the things she taught, one of her most beautiful talks, was what happens when you die. What is the transition process actually like? It's very different from an out-of-body experience. Because an out-of-body experience, you're not dying, you're coming back. I know it's near death, but there's a big difference between near death and death. You know, so when you're not coming back, when you're severing the silver cord, and that's it, this lap on earth is finished, there's a very definite process. And one of the things that happens is you're first taken over to the other side, and you're basically essentially told that you died. Some people don't believe it because, you know, I don't know what they're expecting, but they see a body, they see a form, they're talking to people like we're talking now, and they say, I'm not dead, what are you talking? Then when they realize they're not where they think they are, some of them go into shock because they have never thought about, their mind was so focused physically. Now, Barbara was the opposite. She was so aware of that side, and she'd talk about it, you know, understanding what was kind of in store for her. But during the first, they call it the first 44 days, the soul comes back to say their goodbyes and to also kind of see how things were left, you know. And sometimes, of course, it's a very beautiful thing. You see, you truly left the footprints of love behind you. But could you imagine if you left things really unfinished or people upset? You're going to see that, right? And it's going to help you realize, wow, you know, my life really does matter. I really, you know, it's a lesson for, shall we say, the next lap. And then once that period is over, they go for a rest period. It's called the Rose Room. They're taking into this room because, you know, you might have died of a long protracted illness or a sudden car accident, whatever it is, you have to adjust, and you may sleep here for quite some time, depending on your situation. After that, they take you into some places for healing. Now, people ask, well, what do you, if your body, physical body dies, what are you in? Well, you're in a spiritual body, and they call it the astral body, and it does look like you. You look like you on the other side. If you came to me tonight in your astral body, I'd say, hey, how's it going? You know, I would recognize you, and you would recognize me. But if, let's say, it was a long, protracted illness, that astral body, it took a real beating, so they'll need to heal it. And that is another period of time. But the part, I'm kind of keeping this short for tonight, that's most interesting is once you're kind of acclimated to the other side and still in the transition period, you're taken to a special place where they show you your book of life. And this book of life has the record. Everything, it's like this recording right now that we're doing. Everything we're doing in life is making an impression on the fabric of life, including the intentions, right? Mm-hmm. Everything. So they start showing you scenes from your life, and you see it without the gloss. Oh, no, I didn't mean that. No. You see it as your real intentions. They show you the good things that you accomplished, and they may say, oh, see, you left this undone. And the reason for that is they're helping to understand, because Earth is like a school. So, well, how did we perform in this last life? Where did we succeed? Where did we maybe fail? You know, like any great school, we don't always get A pluses, but they want you to succeed. So if there's some unfinished business, then they let you know what was unfinished, and they'll say, well, for your next lap on Earth, you're going to have to, you know, take care of this. And then there's actually a whole life on the other side. You have a wonderful life. You have friends, you have reunions with loved ones. You have things that you accomplish. If you were doing things here, Barbara's father was a Greek Orthodox priest, and he died when she was kind of young, and she saw him on the other side, and he was still sort of conducting services for those that were in sort of that mindset. So he was continuing his work because he was so good at it. But sometimes people take a very different course, and this can go on for quite some time. If you die before your time, because that does, of course, happen, you reincarnate very quickly. But if it was your time, even at a young age, you will spend quite a bit of time on the other side. But at some point, you've got to get ready for your next lap on Earth. And they again start to prepare you, and they take you to a place where they show, give you a vision of not everything, but some key moments. They call it the tapestry of life, where you're shown some key things you're meant to accomplish. This is going to be your parents. These are going to be your siblings. This is going to be your talent and your career. This is going to be the person you may marry or you may not marry in that life. They'll show some key elements. Now, it's a vision. It's not a done deal. Things are not set in stone, but it's kind of like your mission. And I call it, it's not mission impossible. It's mission possible, you know, but you're going to have to weave that tapestry yourself. So let's say you're on Earth. You don't remember this. And you meet this person, you say, wow, you know, she's really special, and you're meant to marry her. Well, don't get too distracted by another person over here, where you might say, marry them instead. You have to really listen to your heart, because let's say when we fall in love, it's not necessarily just about love. You might be karmically tied to each other. And there's a reason, if that person's in your tapestry, you're in theirs. So it's kind of kismet, as they would say, when that meeting happens. So the more you're kind of open to the dynamics and changes of life, the more you'll be in this flow. And of course, we are serving our purpose to our last day on Earth. I came to California from the Midwest because I was going to be in movies and television and all that. And it was actually going quite well. But I had this very dramatic spiritual awakening when I came to California. No, it's not because I was in California too long. and it got me in a whole different road. But if I hadn't gone to California to begin with and stayed my cozy life in Chicago, it might not have happened. I don't know. Maybe it would have. But it's corny, but you really should be following your bliss. But just know it may not be the end of the road. It may be the next step in the road. Mm. And then be open, because... You know, I love the idea of the labyrinth. A labyrinth's different than a maze, right? A maze has all these dead ends. But a labyrinth has really one point of entry and one point of exit. but all these twists and turns to get there, which is life. Sometimes we have to make all these turns, but you're still trying to get to that one place. It's just, well, you know, you're showing your logo here. I'm seeing the road changing. That's the way it works.
Dimitri, in that explanation, you covered the whole title of this episode, Reincarnation, the Afterlife, and its relationship to karma. Nicely done.
It's called the 5-minute version. Sorry, it's a lot more to say there, but I knew we had only so much time.
No, it's perfect. It's perfect. And actually, let's break a piece or two of this down
please.
Right in the first word is reincarnation. And it's interesting, you and I were talking, you were saying this wasn't really talked about. Agreed. I didn't hear a lot of people talking about it, but recently, I've heard a couple people on different podcasts and even religious shows talk about that reincarnation was known and talked about in the time of Christ and in the Bible.
Oh, of course. Well, it's been known, and the Hindus, of course, have spoken of it for ages, right? So, you know, we have to remember sometimes what I've heard, why it was sort of taken out or downplayed, is they were concerned that if people knew they had another chance, well, they may say, oh, I'll do what I want this lifetime and I'll fix it next lifetime. You know, it may be like a get out of jail free card. But what we have to remember is, if you don't finish what you came here to do, it's going to be harder next time. It's not going to be easier, because you have these opportunities and you let them go. So, you know, when we do these workshops on reincarnation, people would often say, oh, this is going to be my last life. I'm never coming back here again. You know, it was this kind of feeling of frustration. But the point is that we've all had hundreds of lifetimes on this earth. This is not a new thing. There's nothing wrong with reincarnating. But what you don't want to do is to come back and do what you could have done already. That is frustrating. So we all come to this earth with unfinished business. That's partly why we're here. We have a long, rich history that goes back many lifetimes, and we've done some remarkable things in those lives, and we've done some not so great things. So we're meant to build on the good stuff. The talents we have are not accidental. We have earned them over lifetimes. And if there are some bumps in the roads or things that are not so wonderful, it just means you need to fix it. In other words, let's say you, in a previous life, you had this marvelous opportunity for a career and you blew it. You just goofed off and you didn't accomplish it. And that whole lifetime was, in a sense, unfinished. Well, you'll come back again and you'll get that opportunity, but the road to get there is going to be a lot harder because you've created this karmic situation. And it's not a punishment, it's a lesson to teach you, don't take opportunities for granted. You know, when people have really pushed hard for something when it wasn't easy and they got it, in a way, the wine is sweeter, right? Because you worked so hard to get it.
So where does free will fit into that?
It's all based on free will. The decisions you made yesterday, shall we say, have brought you to where you are today. The decisions you're making today are deciding your tomorrow. So free will is actually it's a contraction term. Free choice, the idea of selecting, I'm going to do this or this, and then the will to carry it out. Now, no one wakes up in the morning and says, I'm going to make every wrong decision I possibly can today. But once in a while, that's actually what happens. We just goof it because we don't know the difference. If you don't know the difference between fool's gold and real gold, you may buy the fool's gold and then you get gypped. But you learn, you say, I'm not buying that again. That's not real. So there's nothing wrong with making mistakes. We're all, like any school, we're going to make mistakes. But what the inspiration comes in to tell us is, don't worry about making mistakes, but please don't make the same mistake 20, 30 times. So if we did make a mistake, we just have to fess up to it. Okay, what did I do wrong? If anyone has ever read Gandhi's autobiography, it's a little book. It's not a big thing there. You realize, gosh, he was so forgiving with other people's faults and missteps, but he was relentless with his own. If he saw a fault in himself, he did not rest until he corrected it.
So, okay, intent. So if we don't intend to make a mistake, but we make a mistake, does that still count against us, so to speak?
Well, it's to the degree, right? Now, again, the extreme example, again, take one of the, what could be one of the heaviest of all karmas, murder. So what happens if you murder somebody? Well, you can't really murder the soul. The soul lives on. But what have you done? You have denied that person the opportunity to work out the things they were meant to work out in that particular life. So you take on their karma. You're going to have to come back and help them finish what you denied them.
Wow.
Now, that's, if I do it, let's say, cold-blooded, I want the money, I want whatever, that's a heavy karma. But what if it's the opposite? What if this person is coming at me with a butcher knife and I have an opportunity to stop them, which might kill them, but it's either them or me? Well, they're putting me in a no-win situation. So if I kill them and there's no other choice, that's a completely different motivation. That's self-preservation. We have the right to protect our life. So there's no karma with that. If anything, they've created the karma by putting me in that situation.
And so earlier we talked about a little bit about how reincarnation is actually mentioned in the Bible.
Yes.
Specifically with Jesus, right? Actually, we didn't say
what
how.
What you sow, you reap. What you sow, you reap. And
karma, right.
Yeah, and there's multiple. Yeah, it's there. And the thing to remember with why do you reincarnate, okay, is perfection. No matter how good a life you live, there is no way you can learn everything in a single lifetime. There's just too much to life. Think for a moment, you know, okay, I'm in kindergarten. I'm the best kindergartner the school has ever had, right? I'm not ready for postgraduate work. I'm going to do great at the other. So we have to, the Bible says it, you know, for everything under the sun, there's a season. So we have to experience it all. And guess what? You experience also both sexes. You experience being the male, being the female. You can't do that in the same lifetime. And you experience being the different races. You experience being living in different parts of the world and different cultures. It takes time to really mature the soul. The soul learns through experience. It has to go through all these experiences, and gradually it gets better and better and more mature and more mature and more mature.
Do we have examples of those old souls that have more matured and more matured?
Oh, well, the great spiritual leaders, number one, are obviously very old souls. They've come in. Why were they able to do with, why was Siddhartha, who became the Buddha, able to do what he did? This was a very old soul. But even he, when he would talk about his past life, says, I wasn't always this saintly Buddha. You know, what do they say? There was never a saint without a past or a sinner without a future. So we all have this road, you know, and again, the Bible says that he is without sin, cast the first stone. No one can do that because we have all had a past. But the beauty of reincarnation is we're always given a second chance. I mean, I don't know about you, but if one tiny little lifetime would determine eternity for me, I would be awfully nervous there. It's like the test I'm going to take tonight is going to decide the rest of your life. I don't know if I could even put my name on the paper.
So will power versus divine will.
Yes. So will is what we call, will's not thought. I know this is a common mistake. Will is the stabilizer of thought. Will holds a thought in place until you can make it a reality. I got a great idea to do this. There's your inspiration. But we all know from inspiration to full completion, there's a long road there. And there's a lot of things that are going to say, oh, that's the stupidest idea. You'll never make that happen. So the will is what keeps everything in place. So when you choose, and it's free, you're not forced to do this. You know, they say, oh, the angels have no free will. No, they do. They're doing what they do because they want to do it. But when you can align out of your own free will with the divine will, which means being part of the great divine plan of life, you're going to be more creative, you're going to produce more, you're going to help others more because you're part of something bigger than yourself.
Mm. So this analogy just came to mind, here it is. So it's like a parent throwing a birthday party for a child is what came to mind for their child. And they invite all their friends and the parents go all out. And then the child proceeds to not let any of the kids play and ruin the party. So the parents might not be inclined to throw them another party. So that child had free will, right? They could have
the opportunity is there. Yeah.
The divine will.
And that child's not going to have such a great party next year as a lesson to say, you know what? My parents didn't have to do this. They were trying to please me. And why did I be so cranky? Right. Mm-hmm. So you're going to learn to appreciate, because the lesson there is that child did that because they didn't appreciate what the parents were doing for them. They took it for granted.
Or they couldn't control their feelings, or they let something upset them. Yeah.
Yeah.
So whatever it is.
There's always a reason. So this is, we always say karmic lessons are teachers. So what is the, there's always a lesson that karma is teaching you. If you're facing a tough thing, it's not like, oh, woe is me, I got the short end of the lollipop. It's like, what is my lesson here? What am I learning? You know, Barb always would say, do you want to be the victim of your life or the master of your life? And every time you say the problem's out there, there's, you know, you're weakening yourself. You're playing the role of the victim. You may not be in control of everything around you, but you're in complete control of how you handle it. And that's the measure of your spiritual maturity.
So let's talk about auras for a moment.
Yeah.
I understand fixing what's going on inside of us as far as potentially our mental state or our health, and that fixes our aura, I'm assuming. But you actually teach fixing the aura.
Right. Well, so this is a whole other beautiful subject. And so we are not our physical body. We are a soul. That is who we are. We're inhabiting a physical body. And the fuel of the soul, the fuel that allows us to do everything that we're doing, is the auric field. The aura is multifaceted. So let's say if I'm a creative person, you know, I used to play a lot of piano and stuff like that. Okay, I would draw on some of the creative energies of the universe because that's how I'm using the creative life force. Now, if I was a scientist, I might draw in other energies that would help me accomplish that. So we all draw in these different powers. And if we use them for the purpose they were intended, this is going to beautify our aura and elevate it. You started it perfectly at the beginning. I was saying, God, he's talking about the aura.
Oh.
If I'm yelling, if I'm saying beautiful things, okay, you said it's in the water, but what's really happening is these beautiful energies are coming out with the tone that are beautiful and symmetrical and all of this. And when I'm yelling and, you know, cursing and all that kind of stuff, the energy comes out in jagged colors, dirty, dark. It's not a pretty picture. Mm. If we could really see our auras when we have a temper tantrum, we would never have another one again. As Barb would say, one strong outburst of anger can linger 2 weeks in the auric field. So we got to get control of that emotional part of us. That's very, it's where we make things believable. It's where we put our thoughts into action. But our emotions are not our thinking. And often, as Barbara would say, it's the weakest part of the auric field because we try to think with our emotions. And that's like driving a car without steering. You just say, okay, car, go. There's no, you know, mind has to steer the ship.
That's still working on us and clearing the aura. There's a way to clear the aura without working. I'm not looking for a shortcut. I just didn't know that the right. other.
No, there's two ways you can work with the aura. Every good word, thought, act, and deed is improving your aura. But here, the key to remember this, the reason we called the book Change Your Aura, Change Your Life, is that to make, the first place you make changes in your life is in your aura. If something is in your auric field, it will show up in your life. That's the divine law.
Oh.
And if it's not there, You've just got to work to make it happen. We lived in LA for many years, and you know, that's a company creative town, a lot of people in showbiz and movies and all that. And people said, you know, am I going to be successful in my career? Am I going to make... Well, sometimes she'd be honest and she'd look at the audience and say, well, you got to build up the creative energies more. It's not strong enough. One time I was in the, when I was just met her and I was still kind of in the showbiz world. And as you know, it's sometimes feast or famine. You're working all the time or not at all. And I was in that not working mode. And she casually looked at my heart chakra. And there's a color of prosperity in the auric field, comes through as a turquoise light. And she said, oh, I see all this turquoise coming out of this center. Now, at that exact moment, nothing had come in. But literally 2 weeks later, I got the most lucrative job offer in the business. So the energy to make that happen was in the aura. It just hadn't quite shown up in my life just yet, but I didn't disturb it, so it did.
Hmm. Okay, so I'm guessing that you're going to say something like meditation or prayer or something is going to help that. And you say what you will. And then if you could also explain prayer and meditation, or rather, yes. Is there a difference?
Yeah, there is a difference. But first of all, I do want to say application. You cannot just sit on a mountaintop and pray all day and think you're going to be enlightened. You have to live the truths you're learning. Right? We have to, truth is not truth until it lives in your heart. Every great tradition, religious, spiritual, conduct of living is right up there, right? How you live your life. So you've got to be the change you want to see in the world. But to help build up that power, we do our foundation, everything we do is, it's a combination of meditation and prayer. Prayer is a petitioning, it's a reaching out to the divine to make the connection so that you feel connected to something greater than you. And then meditation is the receiving. It's kind of like completing the circuit. Mm. So what we do, we call them meditative prayers. If I need more confidence in my life, I will make a meditative prayer request to receive this beautiful golden ray. If there's gold in a person's aura, they have confidence, they have self-assurance. We see some people, they don't seem to be daunted by much at all. Well, they've got that, you know, they earned that somewhere. They built that power in them. Well, if you don't seem to have it, call in that energy, but you still got to go out there and be dynamic. You still got to go out there and express yourself.
Okay. Well, before we go on any further, and unfortunately we are coming towards the end of our time together, I feel like I've gotten to experience one of your lectures or one of your classes, and it's beautiful. I got the front row seat and I kept raising my hand. And thank you for answering.
And that does happen. There's always that great person that's asked all questions.
Thank you. I feel better. So I do want to remind everyone that he is, Dimitri is the co-founder of the Spiritual Arts Institute, SAI, and Spiritual Art. Spiritualarts.org is where you could learn more about him. You could also see a trailer at the Life Changes Show page for Dimitri Moraitis. And let me just say, Change Your Aura, Change Your Life is number one bestseller. It's out there. You can get it where books are sold, as is Communing with the Divine, Heaven and Your Spiritual Evolution, Karma and Reincarnation. So if any of what we've talked about is of interest, there are books for that and also courses, right? Dimitri, tell us about what you do.
Yes. We've been doing internet classes long before the Zoom era. We have a physical building in San Diego in Encinitas, but we do workshops, we do ongoing training courses. There's a 6-week course on the Change Your Aura, Change Your Life. And we have a beautiful 2-year program called the Seven Spiritual Arts, where you learn about reincarnation, all the things we've been talking about, we spend a whole lot of time together on.
So we just have a minute or two left, and we could continue on all of these subjects, but something that really, of everything that I've started to read about you and Barbara and the books, Is there a short version of an angel story you could share with us?
Oh, wow. How much time do we have?
Yeah,
a couple minutes. Yeah. Well, first of all, I want to thank you for honoring Barbara tonight, too. It still feels very, you know, kind of raw, but it's nice to be able to do this together. And if I can, maybe I will share one of her stories, because she loved to tell this story. So she was in a serious car accident years ago. Her car overturned. They wanted to operate on her back, and she didn't want to do it. So she worked with, I think it was chiropractors. She was sleeping on a board for 9 months. Of course, money became a big issue. And after a while, she was really praying to the divine, you know, I need help here. And she saw herself out of her body, and she was in what we call one of the temples on the other side. And she, you know, she'd worked with the angels before. She said, oh, my goodness, an angel's going to help me. And she said, I found myself in a room that kind of looked like an office. And then this man came out in this nice blue suit, and he went behind the desk, and he said, can I help you? And she said, in my innocence, I looked at him, and I said, but you're not an angel. And he looked at me kind of humorously and said, I'm not. And then he started to show his colors. And if the aura filled up the room, she almost couldn't take it. And then he kind of subsided again. And she said, I'm sorry, I didn't understand. And then she started to talk about her problem. She said, I know everything going on. And so he started blessing her, but he was basically saying, you have the tools to take care of this, you know. And she said, after that experience, I came back and I got much more proactive and things started turning around. People started helping me. My healing went faster. It just was a transformative moment. And it also kind of reveals Barbara's humor, as people think she's this very serious, you know, clairvoyant or whatever. But she had a great sense of humor, loved to laugh. And her whole life was so close to the Holy Ones, the higher. That was, she really lived for them.
Thank you for sharing that story. I'm so glad I asked. I'm so glad you did that. Dimitri Moraitis has been our guest. Spiritualarts.org is where you could learn more about him, and you could find him on his socials. I should spell that. Dimitri is D-I-M-I-T-R-I, and Moraitis, M-O-R-A-I-T-I-S. What a pleasure connecting with you, Dimitri.
Likewise, thank you. It's really been fun. You've got a great energy, and the show just has a real sparkle to it. So thank you.
Thank you so much. What a pleasure.
A good aura.
Good aura. Nice. Very great. Thank you. Oh my gosh. And with that, we have our Ask Dorothy segment.
I'm going to write that testimonial down, by the way. That's a
good aura. The Life Changes Show is a good aura.
Dear Dorothy, this is Patricia, and I have been expecting information on some boxes that have been delayed. I'm afraid that I clicked onto a scam sent to me on my phone regarding needing a correct address for a box that has been delayed. I didn't answer any of these questions presented to me, and I immediately left the site. How do I find out if my phone has been compromised?
My dear friend, let's choose from this moment forward to never click onto any links on our phones or in our emails if we're not absolutely certain that they are reputable. One important step is to choose not to reply once you've clicked onto the link, so you did well. Another great step is to research the sending address immediately instead of replying, and you will find out whether the address is legitimate or not. The possible good news in your situation is that even though you clicked on the link, you didn't go any further and give them more information that could lead to major challenges for you. Please check out the many excellent articles online as to how to stop spam texts and emails. One helpful article can be found at businessinsider.com, How to Stop Spam Texts. Another helpful tool can be found at NordVPV, which can help you determine if your phone has been hacked and how to identify and remove a hacker. I trust that you will get the help you need and that in the future you will research before becoming a victim, a possible victim to hackers.
Thank you, Dorothy. And if you have a question for Dorothy, please write her at AskDorothy@LifeChangesShow.com.
And we'll be right back with our performance guest, singer-songwriter Katie Buxton, here on the Life Changes Show Online Edition, right after this.
Get ready to ignite your passion for performance this summer at the Mashup Creative Camp. Join us from July 22nd to July 26th, and again from July 29th to August 2nd for an unforgettable journey into the heart of the entertainment industry. At our camp, youth ages 9 to 17 will receive top-notch training in every aspect of performance, from singing and dancing to acting and more. But that's not all. We're not just shaping performers, we're shaping professionals. Our attendees will learn the ins and outs of branding, media presence, and even red carpet training. And for our parents, we've got you covered too. Learn how to navigate the entertainment industry alongside your child, from working with agents and managers to ensuring their safety in precarious situations. Finally, mark your calendars for August 2nd, when our talented attendees take to the iconic Charlie Chaplin stage to showcase their skills to family, friends, and entertainment industry. Don't miss out on this incredible opportunity to unleash your creativity, hone your skills, and shine on stage. Enroll now and let your star shine bright at our Mashup Creative Camp. Go to www.gwen.global/creative-camp. See you there.
The Little Dog That Could is the fantastically true story of a man and a little dog that came into his life as his mentor to help him understand the world beyond his human senses and to experience life, love, and healing beyond his human understanding. Best-selling author Filippo Voltaggio, who currently hosts the highly regarded Life Changes show, is an internationally known singer, speaker, and life coach. Filippo offers up his own story, how one little surprise package in fur and four legs transformed his life unexpectedly forever and furthered his path of self-discovery. In The Little Dog That Could, Filippo brings to life the meaning of the adage, when the student is ready, the teacher appears. Through the reading of this book, you will experience the journey of real miracles that transcend time, space, and logic while gaining practical tools that will help you navigate your way. The Little Dog That Could is available through Amazon and Barnes & Noble. For more information, visit thelittledogthatcould.com. That's thelittledogthatcould.com.
There are self-help seminars costing thousands of dollars guaranteeing miraculous transformations. There are compelling speakers and life-changing weekend experiences where you can walk on fire. They all deliver revelations that guarantee you'll come back for the more expensive revelations filled with even greater wonder next month on Fiji. We get addicted to positive, heartfelt, expensive theater. What we really need is a jumpstart, an awakening. Someone who can give us a reminder that everything we need lies within. Through inspiration and practical knowledge, Dorothy Donahue helps people get grounded and motivated, inspired and energized. It's not just words and affirmations and the power of intention. It's a mindset brought about by a tangible, transcendental experience, an audio-visual, physical, spiritual experience that helps us realize we transform ourselves. We get tools to become the conscious co-creators of lives of unlimited potential. Find out more. Go to dorothydonahue.com.
You are listening to A Conversation That Matters on The Life Changes Show. Broadcasting live from the heart of Los Angeles every Monday night at 7 p.m. Pacific Time. Share the journey with us at lifechangesshow.com and follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at Life Changes Show.
We are back. I am Filippo, and our performance guest is a singer, songwriter, and so much more. We're going to get into that as we welcome Katie Buxton to the Life Changes Show. Welcome, Katie.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
What a pleasure to have you. And you know, interestingly, you are on this show that where we were talking about energy and frequencies and all kinds of other things. And without really thinking about it, you and I were talking about that with what animals feel when it comes to music.
Yes, we were.
Like, we kind of know what we think we feel when we're listening to song lyrics or music. This makes me feel good. But, you know, who knows what the animals are connecting? And why were you and I talking about that?
Yeah, so one big part of my life, especially in the last handful of years, is singing to farm animals because I'm a singer-songwriter, musician, and I also grew up around farm animals. I spent a lot of time as a kid and a teenager with horses, goats, all kinds of farm animals, and I loved it. And then I moved out west to the West Coast in 2018, and it had been a while since I had been around farm animals. So at that time, I started intentionally looking for ways that I could be around them. And I started volunteering and working with different farm animal sanctuaries around Los Angeles. And with that came the idea of, you know, why don't I combine my love for animals with my love for music? And why don't I start singing to the animals? And, you know, I did that and very quickly realized that the animals responded so clearly to the music. Mm. And some of them seemed to just absolutely love it. And so I started sharing videos of myself singing to the farm animals because I thought their reactions were just incredible. And I started sharing these online and they started, you know, getting a lot of traction and going viral because everyone just loved, again, to see the reactions of these animals.
Well, including myself, actually. And so when I saw the first one, I immediately started sharing it with people. Look at this. And so I have to say the horses I get more and more. People are connecting with horses in interesting ways like that. And then what was really special was the goat, and you have mm-hmm. to see the goat. I don't think we posted that, or did we, on our Life Changes show page. But if you go to the page for Katie Buxton, Buxton, you'll definitely see it there, or we'll post it there if it's not. But, but a turkey?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's really interesting with, we were talking about this earlier, but I noticed that birds in particular, like turkeys, chickens, parrots, birds in particular seem to really respond to the music, which makes sense because they're very melodic animals. But it's always cool to see, you know, the music is just such a bridge. And you know, birds like turkeys, for example, a lot of people think that they're harder to connect with because they're just so different from, they operate very differently than mammals and they're very different from us, but there's still this common bridge that connects us in the form of music, which is really amazing.
Mm. And back to frequency, right?
Yeah.
So we'll talk a little more, let's hear a song. And interestingly enough, so you moved to the West Coast in 2018. That really wasn't that long ago. So welcome. And you've written a song about here. I can't wait to hear. What's this song about?
I did, yeah. So I'm going to tune my guitar a little bit because I'm tuned for the other song. So I was living in Nashville, Tennessee. And I ended up, I was there for about 4 years, and then I
Wait,
just
you
felt...
could tune and talk at the same time?
Barely. it's a little difficult. I try to act like I can do it.
Go ahead.
But anyway.
You could tune. Just tune.
I'm all set.
Okay.
So I had just kind of this impulse to move to LA, and I couldn't really explain it. It was just, I felt really drawn to it. And so this is a song that I wrote. I started writing right before I left for the West Coast. And it's called West Coast.
And we get to hear it live here on the Life Changes Show Online Edition. Yeah, this is special. So this is this the one that's been released or not?
This has been released.
It has been released. Okay, here's Katie Buxton's song, sung live, West Coast.
Mm-hmm.
when all my tastes are looking the same. And I want something that's different. I wanna keep wishing for something in my life to change. The West Coast, it's been calling to me. Now all my clothes are in the backseat. And I am driving out to it. Don't know what I'm doing, but I know that I wanna stay free. And I am driving out to it. Don't know what I'm doing, but I know where I wanna be. Yeah. I wanna feel like the sunshine coming through my window, untied to everything so anything goes. I have a feeling, wanna believe in letting it lead me all the way to California. Has been on my mind. Wanna drive on North Ocean Side. Then maybe go back to LA. Figure I'll just stay. Find a room with a view of the tide. Making it up as I go, but it's going good. I'm doing better than I ever thought I could. I do the best when I do it my own way. No justifications or reasons, I gotta say. I'm doing alright, living in the sunshine every day. Ooh, ooh, ooh. Cause I wanna feel like the sunshine coming through my window untied to everything so anything. I have a feeling, wanna believe in letting it lead me all the way to California, all the way to California, all the way, all the way.
Katie Buxton, wow, thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you.
We have all of, or a lot of, Katie's links to website and Apple Music, etc., Instagram and socials, so you can find them at The Life Changes Show. But easy, katiebuxton.com is her website. It's all there too. And Katie, K-A-T-I-E, Buxton, B-U-X-T-O-N.com. And that's how you also find her, mainly on her socials, or Katie Bux, B-U-X. So, Katie, I got to listen to lots of your music, and I was enjoying it and also tuning into it. And a lot of people that are singer-songwriters write about themselves and their life and their story. I thought she must be writing about like processes or like therapy or something, because it's so deep.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. Yeah, you know, some of my songs are like the two that I'm playing today. They're more sort of lighthearted, more personal. But a lot of my songs do come from, you know, growth is a very huge part of my life. It's what drives me forward in life, is just healing and growth. And, you know, it's such a huge part of my life and who I am. And so naturally, a lot of my songs reflect my reflection, basically, my introspective sort of personality. So I end up writing a lot about things that I'm pondering, things that I'm working through, things that are just sort of in that vein. I've written, you know, things about my experience with religious trauma and things like that, working through social anxiety, really all kinds of stuff. Some that border more on like social justice type of topics. And it's important for me to take my music in that direction, just because I just love writing about things that you don't normally hear music being written about.
Speaking of directions, then it would make perfect sense that we make sure everybody knows that I heard about you through that wonderful cover that you did with Colin Martin, our dear friend of our show.
Yeah.
And everything that he's doing in the community with that similar vibe. So thanks for Colin to introducing us.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you, Colin.
Nice. Well, actually, before we get into the next song, did you start writing songs as part of a healing process, or did music come long before that?
So I've been singing forever. I mean, since I was almost born, you know, starting with just humming originally. But I started writing around the age of 12 or 13. And I mean, I've always really written about, you know, my inner processing and stuff like that. But of course, at that age too, it was also stuff that, you know, 12, 13-year-old girls are experiencing and going through and thinking about. But yeah, over time especially, it has really become a tool. You know, it is like my own therapy. It's really a form of therapy and processing, just the writing alone. And, you know, it's helped me a lot to just write about things that I'm working through.
Well, if it's your therapy, I venture to say, then it's a lot of people's therapy that can resonate with what you're saying.
Yeah, it is. I mean, that's one of my favorite things about sharing my music, is hearing the ways in which people resonate with and connect with it. You know, I've met a lot of people who seem to connect really deeply with certain songs, and it's very, very, just really gratifying, and it really reignites a sense of purpose.
So I love how when you and I spoke, you hadn't decided what your next second song on the show was going to be, and you were trying to choose between two different songs, and then when you finally decided it's a different one completely.
yeah.
And I love that. So I'm like, I can't wait to hear, because for whatever reason you were inspired to do this one. Do we need to know anything about this song before we hear you do it live?
So I will be putting out an album this year. This song is the title track off of that album.
Nice.
And yeah, it's called Do You Ever Think of Me?
Well, let us know when that comes out, and we'll get to, actually, I think we're hearing this first.
Yeah, actually, yeah.
Oh, okay. Here's another world premiere on the Life Changes show. Katie Buxton singing live, Do You Ever Think of Me?
The most elegant of robberies, how you stole my heart from me, but all at once I was complete. We went from playing catch up in the park to touching foreheads in the dark, an unexpected work of art we were. But everything, it has to end. Fall to winter, back again. That's okay, but I just miss my friend. Do you ever think of me when you're walking by the trees? Do you ever take my street on your way home? In music stores and seas, feel at home. We were like salt and water of the sea. What we were was meant to be. Loving you came naturally. I made a bet and played a mystery hand. Ended up a wealthy man. Then all my chips were gone again. And everything came to an end. Crumbled what felt heaven sent. Never thought that I would lose my friend. Do you ever think of me when you're walking by the trees? Do you ever take my street on your way home? In music stores and CRVs, downtown roads and falling leaves, I find ways you're still with me to feel at home.
Katie Buxton. Again, Katie Buxton, K-A-T-I-E, Buxton, B-U-X-T-O-N .com. Find that. That's her website. And find her, Katie Bux, B-U-X, on most of the socials. We have all her links at Katie Buxton on our Life Changes page, or find it on her page, or find it where music is sold and shared. And the YouTube videos. Gotta watch those and share those. Right, Katie?
Yeah, absolutely.
It's a special thing, even for us to be watching the animals connecting, and us connecting with you and your music and the animals. Like, something's happening there, and it's really good.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you. And thank you for sharing your music with us live. And let us know when the rest of it comes out so we can share it as well. And we wish you all the best.
Awesome. Thank you guys so much for having me.
It's been our pleasure. With a big thank you to Katie Buxton, and another big thank you to Dimitri Moraitis. That is our show. On behalf of our executive producer, Dorothy Lee Donahue, and our executive producer and co-host, Mark Lejeur, I am your host, Filippo Voltaggio, reminding you that as your life changes, like ours surely did tonight, we're here for you. Ciao, everyone.
You have been listening to the Life Changes Show on the BBS Radio Network. Listen live every Monday night at 7 p.m. Pacific Time, and visit us online at lifechangesnetwork.com, on Facebook at the Life Changes Show, and on Twitter at Life Changes Show. Join us again next week as we consciously explore and embrace the only constant, life changes. The Life Changes Network is an entertainment network. The views and opinions expressed are those of the guests and participants and do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of Life Changes.